cliffcentral.com.
Oh yeah, man. Welcome to it. It's the Weekly Mashup, and that was New Edition with Candy Girl from 1983. Where were you, Candy?
In
83, yes.
That's I wasn't even a thought.
You weren't even a star.
I wasn't even in the planning process.
You weren't even in the universe.
No.
But yeah, that's what we used to rock when I was growing up. And I must say, I recently actually watched, the New Edition story.
Oh my goodness, how amazing.
That? How amazing balls was that, eh?
Oh my goodness, it was my...
It just reminded me of the good old days. I mean, what was it like for you?
The good old days is in 1983 for me. But the good old days in the 90s.
Obviously.
When I was around 8 in 1999. Yeah. It was amazing. Like, I remember being actually very, very happy in those days. Because, I mean, you asked me, because we were speaking about New Edition before we started the show. Uh-huh. And you're like, what do you mean you grew up on New Edition? I'm like, my household played New Edition. Like, Can You Stand the Rain? Wow. My mom named me after Candy Girl. Uh-huh. And, you know, so I'm like a New Edition girl through and through.
No, that's dope. I mean, the fact is, when I was growing up, I always wanted to find a Candy Girl.
Well, you found me.
Not quite what I had in mind. So I'm still looking,
not.
I guess. Oh, gosh.
You're like, this is not what
Lord,
I visualized.
Didn't you hear my prayers?
This is
like,
not
I was
it.
Quite specific. We all saw the video. But, you know, I don't know if you've seen the video. I mean, you saw the reenactment.
Yes, I did.
The miniseries, the TV miniseries.
Yes.
But I went and I actually saw the old video again. And there's a guy in our studio. I don't know if you guys have seen pictures of Sia. But Sia reminds me. Because he's got that cute face about
him. He's gorgeous.
He's
like, Sia would have been a boy band member.
You know what I mean?
He
Sia should have been in New Edition. He's the sixth member.
Wrong continent.
Wrong continent, maybe wrong time.
I mean, like,
let's be honest. In 1983, Sia wasn't even...
Sia's younger than me, probably.
Probably, definitely. Like, what are you trying to say? You're my gogo next to see.
Wow.
Watching that old show and looking at people like Bobby Brown in there,
oh
by
goodness.
The way, Bobby Brown was part
that's
of that.
That's my prerogative.
A lot of people don't know. Johnny Gill, if you're from back then.
Oh,
I know the whole studio, everyone who's out there listening, have no idea who Johnny Gill is. They probably don't even know who Bobby Brown is. Like, my sister.
No.
Yeah, here's the thing, right?
Oh, no.
My sister hears the song, My Prerogative, and
Britney
she's like,
Spears.
But that's a Britney Spears song.
Yep.
She's getting 30. So I'm like, girl, where have you been?
Literally, when I heard Prerogative for the first time, it was Britney Spears, and I was like, oh, baby, you know, listening to Britney. And then My Prerogative, and I was like, this is an amazing song. And then only after watching the New Edition movie, I said to my younger brother, who's like 18, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is a Bobby Brown song. He's like, how didn't you know that? I'm like, I went through Britney Spears era.
The sad truth is that when that song came out, I was rocking it in my mom's Honda. So I was already a fully grown man at that time.
That's
with
so
the beard
sad.
And everything. And you guys don't even have any reference of it.
We have no recollection of where we were.
So watching the miniseries, I came up with a couple of things because I loved it. I really did. It wasn't
it was
just
amazing.
Because of, it was sentimental and I was reminiscing. But I thought there were a couple of learnings that one can pick up from it.
Okay.
And I came up with five things I learned from New Edition.
Okay, five things about what? About life?
About life, about relationships, about success, about everything.
Okay.
So,
I want to hear them.
The first thing is, you gotta want it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
You know
and
what
that's
I mean?
In life, relationships, or anything.
Exactly. Because a lot of people think that, you know, you kind of got to kind of want it, but not really.
And you gotta want it badly.
A lot of people don't even allow themselves to desire certain things.
Mm.
One thing that I always fight about with my younger sister, she's an accountant, so
Ooh.
She knows stuff.
Mm.
I mean, she's a qualified
CA, yeah.
All right?
So she's a smart one.
And she knows the system of the world.
Yes.
In the world, what you do is you go work for things,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't worry about wanting certain things. So she doesn't want a nice car just yet.
Okay.
She doesn't really want a nice house. She's kind of still,
she's very calculated.
Yes.
In
she's
her
still
decisions.
Stuck on. First, I must just get this business up and running,
okay.
and then hopefully I'll make enough money so that I can buy kind of the house of my dreams if I can sort of get it, if I'm lucky, sort of
kind of
something that I settle for. That kind of
what
wise.
we taught from a very early age, that you know, you go through school so you can go to university so you can get a stable job and kind of just
kind of
get
the smaller
things.
Just get something.
Don't set yourself up for failure. That's
exactly,
really what
right?
we taught.
And then
one day,
she's achieved all this stuff and she's got all the money in the world.
When you've been in the corporate cycle for long enough,
you know, she can eventually buy herself the car of her dreams. In the meantime, she's going to drive a piece of crap. You know, because you shouldn't want those things.
Yeah.
But what I realize in life is that if you don't desire something to begin with, whether it's a great relationship, because even with relationships,
and
what we
so
do
important.
Is, I just want a man.
Oh.
You know, if at least if he's just nice to me.
Yes.
And that's what you get. And no, you wonder why the universe
only
or God
gives you.
Always gives you exactly what you want.
But have you read that poem? I bargained with life for a penny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I don't have the poem in front of me, but basically,
I like the premise.
Yeah,
of that.
No. It's a really beautiful poem, and basically, what this author says is that he bargained with life for a penny, and then he says, "But life would pay no more." Every night, you know, I would shuffle around in my shanty store or something like
that. Wow, I hope you're listening to that.
Yeah. And
I'm listening to
that. So then after he says, like, in this whole thing, when on his deathbed, he realized that, you know.
He should have asked for more.
He should have asked for more because the same heart and, like, sweat, hard work, sweat and tears could have gone to building a greater vision had he just wanted it. But he was too afraid to want it, so therefore he never got it.
I think that's what life is about, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to want something because the thing is, and here's what I learned as well, and it's from a biblical point of view, but there are some things that God will withhold from you that you want,
okay,
only to increase your desire for it. I'll give you an example, right? If every day you go out and you eat at a 5-star restaurant, when you're not really hungry, the food won't taste that great.
Yeah.
But if you allow yourself to feel a little bit of hunger, when you eventually get to that 5-star restaurant, the food will taste so much better. And when you eventually get it, you will appreciate it so much more.
Mm.
So the first lesson in everything in life is you got to want desire.
And you got to want it badly.
You got to want it.
Because sometimes people want things, but they don't want it badly enough.
That's right.
So they want it, but they don't want to work for it. They want it, but they don't want to improve themselves to get it.
That's
they want it, but they don't want to upskill themselves. So yeah, so you got to want it. That's
but
lesson
that's
number one.
Part of wanting it, right? If you allow yourself to actually have the desire, the other things could probably follow quite organically, as I say. So one, want it. Want it with all your heart. Number two, you got to get a mentor. You got to get somebody that you look up to, somebody that can help you on the road to where you're going.
Okay.
I'm putting that before hard work because here's why.
Yes.
Because sometimes we spend our life working. We're busy all the time. Have you noticed? I mean, I went through that stage where I was just busy. I was running from one meeting to the next.
And it's great to say I'm busy.
Multiple proposals. Mm-hmm. I was doing all the stuff, saying I'm busy, trying to prove that I'm working hard. Nothing worked out.
Oh, yeah.
Why? Because I was doing the wrong things. If you're going to plant a seed, if you're going to plow, and you're going to do it in the wrong soil, you can plow all you like. You can drop all the seed you like.
If it's not fertile ground,
it's not going to grow.
But can I tell you on that? There's a speaker who's worked with, you know, your Oprahs and all the top people of the world. His name is Brendan Burchard, and I just came into contact with him recently. And he basically says, why do people start life without a map? You know, it's like going into the forest without a map and expecting to find what you're looking for.
Exactly.
So it's better to equip yourself before you head into the forest and be like, okay, I know where I'm going. So at least you've got a better chance of getting there.
And the thing with finding a mentor, I think we make it difficult because my idea of a mentor initially was I got to find this older guy who's been in business and they're really successful.
Wisdom beyond.
You know, find them on the internet, call their PA and secretary and hopefully
email 100 times.
Email 1,000 times and hopefully set up this appointment and see them once a week. And then it's like difficult.
Hopefully.
And then I just hang out with them for an hour every week.
Mm.
And then they just like give me a list of things that I must do. And no. It's as simple as there are some people in your sphere just who have done things that you haven't done.
Yeah.
They might be your age. They might even be younger.
Mm.
I find that having a mentor has got nothing to do with age.
I've got 100%.
I think I've got a lot of mentors that are actually younger than me.
Mm.
I've got great ideas.
Mm.
But what I like to do and what I mean by a mentor, just find people who are doing some of the things that you'd like to do and are doing them already and doing them well. And hang out with them. Just hang out with
and
them.
Learn from them.
And then learn from
but
them.
But can I also say, there's another dimension to mentorship because, I mean, I remember when I was starting out, I had that very traditional idea of mentorship, like, I need to have this person in my life and da-da-da. But then I realized as I was going through life that, you know, your mentors don't need to be a part of your actual physical space.
Yeah.
So what I learned is that, you know, I could have mentors that weren't here. So I could, like, Oprah was my mentor at one
time. There you go.
And it is watching what she is doing, learning about her pitfalls, learning
very
about...
good.
Because, and sometimes when you do find a mentor in physical reality and you can meet them, they need to be someone as invested in where you're going as you are.
Exactly.
Because people tire quickly. So they don't want to, you know, always be investing because they got their own life, you know, going on.
And they're busy, man.
They're busy.
And
so they're not going to be thinking about you 24/7 like you thinking about you.
Yeah.
So you need to take what you can, but try and find someone who's also invested in your success.
I love what you just said there. And I think it's worth repeating. Because we're so busy looking for this magical mentor somewhere, sending these 100 emails.
The fairy godmother almost.
The fairy godmother. Yeah. When there are mentors all around us, like the internet, social media has given us so many mentors that we can actually follow. Mm. I mean, even mainstream media, you can literally listen to a certain radio show.
Listen to TED Talks, for example.
You know
like,
what I mean?
When you listen to certain TED Talks, I find that I'm so inspired by the thinking that I'm like, that's how I want to deliver a talk when I talk. Or, you know, you follow other people. So you encounter someone and you're like, oh, I wonder how they got there. You follow their story. And sometimes when the story's over and you no longer relate, move on. Find another mentor to say, this is how I will model my behavior and sit and talk and whatever. Because it's very much about modeling who you are as a person into the person you want to become already.
Yeah,
you know?
And eventually you'll become your own mentor.
Oh,
what I loved
yeah.
about the movie is that the kids realized that they wanted to start a group together and they wanted to get somewhere.
And they were ambitious.
They needed an older person who was familiar with the industry
already
to guide them.
Mm-hmm.
So they found themselves a manager. But at some point, they realized that the manager wasn't really working for them. They got another manager. Mm-hmm. When they realized that manager wasn't working for them, they actually became their own manager.
Yes.
So at some point, you've also got to outgrow the mentor thing,
yes,
right?
You've
got to move on. And then number three is you got to put in work. I'm putting it there because it's important. Because once they found their mentor,
work.
They made sure that they arrived at the dance studio on time. They were like some unruly
working
children.
Out.
But they worked, man. They worked out, you know. And I realized that sometimes we don't put in the work that we're supposed to. Why? Because it goes back to desire. If you don't desire something enough and hard enough, you can give yourself excuses of, you know what, it's okay that I didn't work that hard. What I realized that this year, I want certain things in my life. I don't want any more excuses for my success.
I love that.
I want to get to a point, Candy, where if someone knocks on my door tomorrow and says, you got a part in a new Hollywood TV show or film, I've got no excuses to say I'm not going to the audition because I don't feel completely confident in the way I look and my body and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
So what I'm saying to myself is, do you want it? Do you really want that?
Mm.
Prove it to yourself first.
Precisely.
By waking up every morning, and you know I hate morning.
I know.
But these days, my body,
I woke up at 5:30 this morning. Yesterday I sent you a text early in the morning.
I saw it before
and
I went to work out.
I saw
out.
It blue ticked. I was like, oh my God.
I was like, I can't answer you right now because I'm going to work out. I'll answer you when I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, I've gotten to a point now where my body is number one. It's used to waking up earlier.
Yes.
The initial first month, I can assure you, was hard. My joints, you know, I don't recover as easily anymore like I used to. I'm not that age.
Yes.
But my joints were always hurting. It was hard to wake up. I was grumpy. But now I'm grumpy if I don't work out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's what eventually happens. And the other thing that I found is my body just wakes up early on its own. I don't even need an alarm clock.
Yeah.
By 6, I'm like, hey, hello. And hopefully one day, I'll be like you. I'll be waking up at 5 in the morning and getting on my broomstick.
High dreams.
Loyalty people.
Wow. Okay. That's what we get for being fit.
Yeah.
No, but I like what you're saying. I think it's very important to go back to that quote that says, luck is when opportunity meets preparation. Mm. So right now what you are doing is you're putting in the preparation that when the opportunity comes knocking, you are prepared to take it.
For
and
sure.
you're not going to be telling yourself, oh, it's because of ABC that I can't do it. You're ready to take off and you're ready to let it, you know, take you wherever it needs to take you.
Look, we're all evolving and we're always learning. But what I learned is that even at my age and my stage, you know, sometimes you get to a point where you can get very comfortable and things become easy. And the body and human nature by its, we like to be comfortable.
Oh yeah.
But you've always got to get out of your comfort zone. You've always got to be hungry again to succeed, to get to the next level.
I so agree.
And you know what's crazy about life? Life will create a situation for you where you will get hungry again. So don't even worry about that. If you're not hungry right now, you're going to be hungry soon. Trust
me. They say the only constant is change.
Exactly.
And
right?
if you're not adapting.
So a lot of the times we put off putting in the work because our desire is not at that point where we're hungry and desperate for
it. In your head, you're like, I'm not there yet.
Yes.
I will put in the work when I'm there.
Yeah.
But the irony is, if you're not putting in the work now, you're not going to
get
there.
But we self-sabotage.
Oh, of course.
You know why? Because we're usually taught that we are not allowed to want certain things. So sometimes you tell yourself, but I'm not really allowed to want that level of success. I'm not even...
what makes me worthy?
Perish the thought of even talking about it. Because yes. immediately I'm putting in those little voices in my head where I'm thinking, if I say that out loud to Candy, she might say, what makes you think you'll ever get there, man?
But can I tell you something on that point? I learned very early on in my career, and before even my career started taking off, I learned that not everyone is supposed to know your dreams. Not everyone's supposed to know your destination. Because what's placed within you, some people can't see. And it's not up to you. They will see it when it happens.
That's right.
But you should not be telling them, because all they're going to do is be like, no, but, you know, start small or do this or do that. And they're going
to
lead
you.
They're going to lead you on a path where you start having self-doubt because you're like, if everyone doesn't see it like this, then it might not be.
But really, do you think you could ever speak on a world stage?
Precisely.
Like, imagine you having a TED Talk. It's too big for you, hey?
Precisely.
You know, just think of, maybe if you speak at a couple of schools for a couple of years.
And that is exactly what has happened to me time and time again, where people were like, dream smaller, don't. And then I look at myself and I speak in front of people like, you know, George Bezos, or I'm invited to the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I'm like, look at me.
Look at me right now, right?
look at me.
The thing. You know, the story of someone like Tony Gaskins Jr.
Yes, who's a
great motivational speaker.
Yes.
He now, I think he's a motivational speaker for one of the teams in the NBA. But you can imagine, you know, his life story, saying you want to be a speaker in your 20s and you want to be a motivator. It's like,
because
you don't have enough life experience.
Precisely.
No, your life experience is enough.
Yes.
You know, because his life experience was enough at that time. He doesn't need to, you know, fall into the pattern of drugs and picking himself up again over and over.
Wait for 50 and then go.
You are at that point where you've gone through something.
Yeah.
All of us have a story where we've had to triumph.
Yes.
You're ready to do it. All right. Number four, you got to look for your lucky break. Now, I say that you got to look. Listen to what I'm saying. You got to look for your lucky break.
I like that.
You got to create luck. In other words, what it is we're all waiting for the lucky break, but we're not looking for the lucky break. Opportunity, they say, it's a cliche now, but it does come clothed in hard work.
Mm.
Yes, we said we're going to say no to a lot of things this year.
Yes,
but there's some things that when you say yes to, that's the opportunity that you're waiting for. But at the same time, look for your own opportunities. What these kids went out and did was they realized that there was a talent competition out there that they wanted to be part of. And they knew that if they were part of that talent competition, they could one day get a recording deal.
Oh,
so they
yes.
went out there, they rehearsed, and they went to look for their luck.
But before they even went and looked for that opportunity, when they decided that they wanted to form a group, they went and looked for another member.
Yes.
And that's how they found Ralph. And they were like, no, we need another dude in this group in order for us to be a group and taken seriously, like the Jackson 5.
Exactly.
And they went out and they're like, I think I know someone. He's got a bit of a vocal pipe. Like, let's go. And had New Edition not found Ralph, they would not have beat New Edition, because Ralph carried the group for a lot of, for the very early parts of their career.
Yeah, in
but
fact,
he carried
all
the group
through. You know, I mean,
much,
the only time
until Johnny Gill came in.
Yeah, and you know, Bobby, until Bobby woke up and realized that she's a superstar. But nonetheless, the great thing is, I mean, all of them in their own rights were superstars.
Yes.
Biv DeVoe came out of, New Edition.
Yeah.
Johnny Gill came out of that. Bobby Brown came out
every
of that. Ralph Trasvezen came out of that.
Mm.
So every single one
Michael
of them.
Michael Bivins,
you know, they were huge. From New Edition, that's how we got Boys to Men.
Yes, things like that. Because they named themselves after the New Edition song, Boys to Men.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they went to New Edition, and New Edition, I think it was Michael Bivins, who helped them become Boys to Men. So it's those sort of things. But what I'm trying to say, and even Boys to Men went to look for their own luck. They went
Precisely.
And performed for Michael Bivins after a concert.
Luck won't come knocking at your door.
No, you got to go.
Like, there are very few opportunities or times where you find yourself in a very fortunate position where you're like, whoa. But even in those positions, sometimes you look and you're like, this is not my lucky break, because no one would have known. I would not have known at the time that my story broke. I could have taken that and been like, I'm not ready, I'm scared, you know, people won't receive me. But because I was just like, I'm gonna do this, you know, I'm scared, but I'm gonna do it anyway.
You learn on the job. Sometimes
you
learn on the job.
And all of a sudden everything starts to change. The more opportunities you seize and the more lucky breaks you take advantage of, I find the luckier you become.
That's right. And finally, number five, you gotta keep it together. Keep it together. You got to do that.
Yes.
Here's the thing, right? What happens once you've achieved a certain level of success, you get tested on that.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing about life is I even have to tell myself this. The one thing that is going to be consistent about life, you call it change, I call it trouble. Trouble will be with you every day of your life.
Yeah.
But tough times are only as tough or as you are.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got to be tougher than the tough times. When tough times are going to come, the question is, are you tougher than those tough times? So you got to keep it together. With these guys, yes, they found that they were fighting each other a lot. And that's what really kept them out of or out of the ultimate success that they were looking for. They never got to that point where they were, in terms of monetary success, they were that successful because they kept breaking their concert tours halfway because they fight all the time and they couldn't keep it together. So what I'm trying to say to everybody out there, whether you're in a relationship and you know, the beginnings of the relationship of, you know, the honeymoon stage comes to an end.
Blossoms.
Yeah, and now you realize the real life stuff.
This is a human being.
Keep it together.
Keep it together. But you, in keeping it together, you know what I like about you? Firstly, all five tips, well done, T. They're amazing.
Thank you.
It must be all your life experience.
That's all I got.
That's all you got. No, but keeping it together really symbolizes the idea that people think that after you reach a certain taste of success or a certain level of success, it's easy sailing from there.
No.
There are no more problems.
Yeah.
But I mean, you only need to listen to Biggie. I don't know why, but the more money we come across, the more problems we see.
The more problems
People sing along to these lyrics, but they're not listening.
They're not listening.
Because you reach, okay, so you, firstly, the frontier where you are, right? You feel like, okay, I'm at the bottom. I don't have money, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, when I get money, my life, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to do this. Then you get money. Then you realize, shit, money can only make you, listen, money can make you happy for so long and for so, it can only stretch so far.
And then
opportunities, you know, sometimes you do that overqualified statement.
Yeah.
Sometimes your opportunities either become less because people are like,
you're not too expensive.
You're too expensive or you're too this. But I think it's definitely keeping it together and always reinventing yourself. Never become complacent in this is who I am and I'm going to die like this.
Yeah.
Reinvent yourself. Learn about the changing times and adapt.
And the other thing about trouble when it comes your way, remember that if it all works out for the good, you might find that what you're going through is a skill you're going to need later on. For example, litigation, right? I have found that over the years, I sued my insurance company when I was in my 20s. And I was like, this is hard work. But it was a skill that I needed later on when I went to court again. And even now, when I just, you know, recently had my court stint and whatever, I can tell you that when it comes to being in business, you're definitely going to need to have the skill where you understand litigation, you understand the legal stuff. So you might be going through something right now, but whatever it is that you're going through that's tough, remember that it's setting you up for when something really hectic happens later on in your success, you can deal with it much easier. But I want to just jump to what you were up to on, Human Rights Day?
Yes.
At the George Bezos New Gallery opening at the Apartheid Museum with Sue Williamson, and she was obviously showing off her new works. Is it paintings or?
No, actually Sue has got, I mean, she's got such an extensive history of work, and I mean, I'm so privileged that she decided that I was a good candidate for some of her material. And
okay, so what does she do though?
Okay,
what kind of medium is it?
Basically what Sue does is she readdresses the past using art. Mm. So she talks about past things that have happened during apartheid, and she uses art forms in order for people to become more receptive to it. So this particular piece that I was involved in is called Pleasure to Meet You, and she's taken it to Paris. It was very well received. The artist Christian Lacroix, for all my arty friends and fashion friends. Yes.
The one with the red bottoms?
He watched it. No, that's Louboutin. It's another Christian, but he's just as great. And he watched it and he sent his regards to me and he thought it was an incredible documentary. So that was a highlight.
Oh, I see. So it's a documentary.
Yes. It's almost like a docu-series kind of thing.
Oh, but nice. Where can we catch it though if we missed it?
Okay. So you guys can still go to the Apartheid Museum and just catch it there because it's there until the 31st of May.
It's not online or anywhere else?
It's not online at the moment because it really is. When you see it in an art space, you see why you need to see it in a gallery, because it's artistically crafted in order for it to look like Sia and I, the other gentleman I was in the documentary with, are in conversation. But it's a really beautiful piece. And this week on Human Rights Day, I was going to say this weekend on Human Rights Day, I was very fortunate to speak in front of George Bezos as a panelist to the piece. And it was amazing.
He was Nelson Mandela's lawyer in the treason trial.
You know what's funny about George?
Why we have George? Who is he? Yeah.
Yes, you know the irony about George Bezos. I was actually thinking about this last night before I went to bed, and I thought to myself, oh my goodness. So what happened was when my father passed away, Eugene de Kock had been on trial, you know, at the TRC, but he had been testifying. So Eugene had actually got an amnesty, you know, for all the cases that he had testified to. And the irony was that it was my father's case, the now spread four, that put Eugene de Kock behind bars.
Wow.
So George Bizos actually kept, he managed to catch Eugene out in a lie with my dad's particular story. And that's how Eugene de Kock ended up getting life life sentence behind bars.
Okay.
And then the irony of this was it's very much a full circle moment, because I thought to myself, I think my voice in a very little way contributed to Eugene being free. Yeah. And it was my dad's case that contributed to him going behind bars. So it was a very full circle moment.
But isn't that interesting? Exactly like what you say.
Yeah.
Like these things happen in a way. So this guy, right, he murders your father.
Yes.
Goes to jail for it.
Yes. Because of my father's case.
Yes, because of your father's case. But here's the thing, right? The only way he can be freed is through your forgiveness.
Unbelievable, right?
I mean, if I was Eugene, I'd be broken by that.
He's like, this is the case that got me behind bars, and now this is the case that's freeing me in a lot of ways. But
yeah.
You know, and I mean, before obviously I met Eugene, I had no idea, like I had no context of the fact that it was my dad's case that had put him behind bars. But I thought to myself, last night it was like a very surreal moment, because I was still, you know, reminiscing from speaking in front of George Bizos, and I thought to myself, like, who would have thought that this would be my life? You know, that I would be sharing this, that I would be sharing such an incredible moment at the Apartheid Museum and speaking to George, who was the person who put Eugene behind bars.
Okay.
And it was unbelievable to me.
And how does it feel being at the Apartheid? Because that Apartheid Museum sometimes makes me a little bit angry. I need like post-traumatic stress disorder management classes after that.
You know,
I lived through it. I was there in the state of emergency.
No, you know what it is? It was, I think, firstly, I've been to the Apartheid Museum before.
I still live in Pretoria, so, you know.
Yeah. It brings it back. I've been to the Apartheid Museum before, but I think with this particular, because it's a new gallery, it's just extended from the Apartheid Museum, but same entry.
Mm-hmm.
So being in the gallery itself is gorgeous. It's a beautiful gallery.
Yeah.
And being there, it's very, you know, it's not comfortable. You know, and I think you have to confront certain realities that we face. And
But I think we all have to go through that, especially with what we're going through right now. I don't want to get into that topic of racism and blah, blah, blah. But I think if we all took the time to understand what we went through, we wouldn't be trying to go through it again now.
Oh, yeah.
We really would be like, you know what, guys?
If you
only knew what happened before, why are we still doing it now? It's 2017. Let's have some fun.
Yes.
Let's all go and share the Spur Free Burger Monday or something together. Let's not go to Spur and cause.
No, but I completely agree. And I feel like dialogues like this are actually pushing people to address something in a conversational way, you know, so that people can understand that no one wants to go back there. No, that is not a fun place to be.
Not being there. But anyway, we've got a guest in the studio that we're about to talk to.
Yes.
Coming up just now. And basically, she wrote the book called The Holistic Entrepreneur. I'm not going to tell you who it is until we introduce you to her just in a little bit of time. In a few minutes, right?
Just a minute. Yeah, in this quick minute, I want you to tell me what it feels like to be a SAFTA award winning producer.
Yes, well, I have to win it again, but this time as a producer.
Oh my gosh. High horse.
It's pretty good. You know what I mean? Like, the thing is, right, I'm an actor, but I love producing, so I've gone into that field.
Okay,
and to have one as an actor and to have one as a producer is amazing. I really wanted the acting award on Saturday night. Warren got that, Masemola, and he's awesome.
He's brilliant.
And so I take nothing away from him, but that was the award I wanted.
But
Warren, you have my award. I want it back.
But you want producer. Yeah. See, what exactly is a producer? So what is your role as a producer in a project?
I find that being a producer is really exciting, because what you do is you put the whole project together. So you started at basically idea level.
Okay.
You find the right people for the right job.
Okay.
And then you negotiate with those people to make sure that the job is done based on the budget that you have.
Oh.
So part of being a producer is you get a script, you know, once you decide this idea, once you've got the script, you break the script down into all the different scenes, into all the different locations, and in every location, who are the actors in that location?
Mm.
What are we going to need in terms of props, like clothing, like cars, telephones, blah, blah, blah. And then you cost every single line item.
Oh, okay.
So you try and make everything on the same day and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
The cameras that we're going to need, the lights that we're going to need, and then you budget it. So that's the very hard part of producing. Then after you've budgeted it, then you go and find those locations, you go and find those actors, you go and find those props, and you make that happen.
Wow. So at least you've got, you're not just beauty, you're brains too. You can do behind,
I'm
in front,
more
behind.
Every day, thank you.
Wow. No, but I think it's so important for people to understand the different roles on a set.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked you what producing really does, because I mean, we see producer, director, screenplay, blah, 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 but none of us really understand what it means.
Yeah.
So you still won.
Yeah, we still won.
Does that mean you get more money?
No, unfortunately, in South Africa, you cannot use your SAFTA to negotiate.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's something that you just have. Like,
that's a shame.
I've got a SAFTA. But dare you say to anybody, hey, guys, I've got a SAFTA, so I guess that means I get paid more. You'd be like, that's just bad form. That's just not correct. We're very modest. We're a very modest country. It's like, yes, we know you got a SAFTA, but that doesn't mean that you're special.
But just calm down.
But anyway, we've got
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. So I don't want to waste any more time, because I want you guys to hear about this. If you are an entrepreneur, out there, even if you're not an entrepreneur, you're just somebody who wants to succeed in life, in relationships, in what you're doing, at your job, in anything, as a student, this is a book that you must get. It's called The Holistic Entrepreneur by Jodine Shah. So without any further ado, I would like to introduce get a drum roll for that. Do I even have applause on the
You thing? Don't have applause.
I
will give you applause.
All right, thank you, Candy. I think they switched off our applause.
You know what? I think the crowd is like really holding their breath now.
Look, there's no applause coming except from us. Just enjoy it. Okay, welcome to it. How are you doing, Jodine?
I am so great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's only
what a pleasure.
I want you to speak closer into the mic so the people at home and
can
around the world
ya.
Can hear you. You know, we're a worldwide show.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start with a bit of background. Mm. Who is Jodine and where are you from and all that? Where would people know you from?
People most probably know me from Twitter. I was one of the first people. You know, at one stage, whenever I do any of my talks or workshops or anything, I do say at one stage I had more followers than Gareth Cliff.
Okay.
And I wish I had screen grabbed that.
That's a big deal.
But I never screen grabbed that.
It's not everybody who has.
Did you hear that, Gareth?
So I was definitely born to be an entrepreneur, and my story really unfolds. But I just fell in love with social media, and I started to use Twitter to tell my story of my first business, which is people development and change management. Mm-hmm. And I really grew into the social media space. So that's how people know me, and that's how people found me, just tweeting about life and what it means to live holistically.
Okay, so if people want to follow you on Twitter, what's your handle?
It's Jodine Coza, JodeneCoza.
For their daily motivation.
And it's everywhere. It's absolutely everywhere.
Facebook, everything.
Yeah. From the beginning, it's so funny because the world has changed so much. And when I started, I always was so entrenched in being this real Josie girl. And now the way that life has changed, more and more of me just wants to be unsettled and just be anywhere
world,
I can be.
World settled. Yeah. You know what I love about the book, Jodine? In the beginning of the book, you discuss, because I call myself a self-help chick, right?
Right.
Because I grew up very much in self-help books. And I think you discuss in the book what probably every self-help person goes through, which is they tell you, just visualize, just affirm, just, do all these great things. And you're like, I am happy. I am happy. And deep down, you're like, I'm falling apart. What led you to actually writing a book to tell people, look, you are worthy of these great things? But it is not going to happen through just sitting and visualizing.
I've always wanted to be a motivational speaker.
Okay.
And I've always wanted to know why I've wanted to do it. I have wanted to tell people that you can achieve what you want to in life, but it doesn't go according to the formula that everybody else has put out there. Not a lot of people know that the self-help industry is worth hundreds of billions of US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of billions
of
US dollars. Mm. Surely, with all that money spent, we should be in a better place.
Yeah.
Surely.
Mm.
And I started to unpack all of those questions, mainly because I have tried everything, from Buddha to Oprah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Every single thing.
Yeah, girl, we're on the same path there.
Try Jesus.
Everyone. Everything. And when I started to work together with my business partner, and we started to unpack just the real basics of the laws of the universe and how it works, and we wanted to simplify it, Our company, Lifeology, the slogan for the company is courage, consciousness, and a sense of humor.
Yes, yes, yes.
And when we did that and we had a marketing strategist come in and help us, the first thing that he did was he said, you'd need to change that. Because no one's going to take you seriously when you're saying that you are showing courage, consciousness, and a sense of humor.
My business, I would have loved it.
It's amazing.
Did you guys change it?
We never changed it.
No, they didn't.
Okay, we never changed it. And we have always gone according to our basic beliefs, our foundation of philosophy, which is living with courage, consciousness, and a sense of humor. And the more I worked through it and the more I watched things work out in my life, but what really made me want to write it was I do a lot of travel because I have the joy of having a beautiful relationship with money that I worked on myself. Not always the greatest.
Yeah.
I have this story tells of two failed businesses and then two successful businesses.
Yes.
And a lot of people message me on my travels and they say things like, I'm jealous, or I envy you, or I wish.
Ooh.
And then my
red lights are flashing right now.
And then my response to them is, you can have it. And I realized people just want to understand how. So that's why I wrote it, because I am the holistic entrepreneur. Every single thing that I guide people to do in the book, I do every day of my life. And you know what I've learned most of all is that people are too afraid to try it.
Oh, yeah.
People are too afraid to do just the first thing that I say in the book. And if we can just be brave enough to try and do something different, so much can change.
And people are also self-sabotaging in terms of what they say. So once you say, I envy you, I'm jealous, or I wish, what you're saying is you're pushing things that you want away from yourself. But I love the story that you wrote here in Esteem versus the Saboteur, and I'm going to read it. Once upon a time, there was a grand oak tree that stood steadfast in the woods for hundreds of years. During the warm summer, it blossomed with acorns and leaves, bursting with an array of green shades. In the winter, however, it was barren and looked as if it may not weather another storm. Beaten from the snow and broken from the angry wind, the tree relied on its tireless roots to hold it steady and waited for the warmth of summer so it could begin to heal and blossom once again. This is about self-worth.
Yes. Don't you love that rereading?
Don't
I feel like he should do the audiobook.
Yes!
I kind of read it faster.
He's like, I could do it better.
People don't understand that there is a difference between self-worth and self-esteem. And of all the things that I love teaching in the book, this is definitely one of them.
Can we talk about that for a second? What is the difference? What is self-worth? And then tell us what self-esteem is.
Self-worth, just like the oak tree, it is the roots of who you are. It is the things, the character within you that will never ever change. And one of the things to do is to have a look at your whole life and everything that you've been through. When people look at the timeline of their lives, it's so easy to pinpoint all the things that went wrong. But what pulled you through? There's, you know, the Elton John song, I'm Still Standing.
Oh, yeah.
When you forget about things like that.
I'm still standing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, just to put you in context.
So a lot of times I put that song on, I dance around my room, and I remind myself of the parts of my character that I have always had. It's a process to figure it out, which is in my book, but it is the roots that hold you firm no matter what you go through. And then there is that part of you that has to deal with everyday life. There's money issues, there's relationship issues, there's life issues. And our self-esteem does get knocked around. But when we know the foundation of who we are, then we are held strong while that self-esteem is bashed and battered around.
Oh, hold on a second, just in case I missed it. Your self-esteem is who you are on the outside.
Yes.
Am I correct? Your self-worth is who you are deep down inside your roots.
Yes.
Who you are almost, I'd say, on the inside.
Okay. The core.
The core.
The real core. And the problem with self-help is that self-help gives the impression that it is going to make life easier.
Oh, yeah.
It does not make life easier.
Yeah.
Money doesn't flow every single day for the rest of your life.
No matter how many times you affirm it.
No matter how many times. Relationships come and go. We do get bashed around.
Yes.
But we hold on to self-help and we hope that it's going to take all the issues away. That's not the point of self-help. The point is to build a self-worth within you that you can manage all the things that do happen within life.
Yeah.
You're never going to be put in some protective bubble because you say a positive affirmation or because you believe anything. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I love that because it's part of what we were talking about. Trouble comes to everyone. The rain falls on the good as much as it does on the bad. But there's something about human nature, and I know I've experienced it, where you go, but I've read all these books. I've done everything that Jodine said. And, you know, I got to a level of success. I'm happy. I've made the money. I've bought the things that I wanted. And everyone thinks I'm great. But there's certain things in my life that are not working out. And you know what? I'm unhappy again. As opposed to saying, actually, there'll always be something in your life that is not perfect. And that's part of growth, is it not?
Absolutely. And when I wrote that book, the week, because what I did was I had the most amazing writing coach, because my self-esteem really took a bashing when I was writing this book. And during the week that I wrote the chapter about money and my beautiful relationship with money, I lost my biggest client. Financial stability was pulled out from right from under me. And it would have been easy for me to go, now I'm not worthy of writing the book.
I'm a hypocrite, almost.
But life happens. And I kicked into my self-worth. I took a couple of days to go through the process of feeling the fear and knowing that I could do anything about it and getting back on track. And one thing that I honestly believe is all you have to do every day is do one little thing that scares you. Not a huge, big, major thing. Don't ignore your post because you don't want to see what you owe. Don't turn a blind eye to a conversation that you need to have with someone because you know truth is going to come out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
One little thing each day. Because telling yourself the truth is the one thing that shifts your whole energy. You know, everyone says thoughts become things. It's the biggest thing in self-help. Thoughts become things.
I've been thinking I'm a bagel for a very long time. I'm still me.
But we have it so wrong. Thoughts do not become things.
Yeah.
The way you feel about thoughts become things.
Okay.
So when you do things like affirmations and you stand in front of a mirror and you go, I'm happy, I'm successful, I'm happy, I'm successful. But you're saying it in this desperate hope that feeling will kick in. Then energetically, you're not putting out the right thing. So if you aren't doing one thing each day that scares you, then you just, the fear is just continuing to, it's sitting there.
I like what you're talking about. So basically what you're saying is do something that scares you so that you can get used to the idea of fear. And that's the only part of beginning to conquer fear.
Yes.
Get used to the fact that you will be sometimes scared, but you'll have to move in that fear.
Absolutely.
That's how you get past fear, right?
Absolutely. And we're supposed to be afraid. You know, sometimes I just want to pack all the stuff that we're being fed just into a box and set it alight, because we are constantly being told, only think happy. Only don't say that.
Yeah.
Someone goes, I'm afraid. Don't say that. Rather say you're not afraid.
Why or just rephrase it, apparently. Yes, so you can't say negativity.
My favorite word is but.
Okay. I'm afraid, but. Takes away
everything
before
right? Yeah.
And what people normally do is they take the but and they turn it into negative. I have this opportunity, but it never works out for me.
The self-sabotage.
Exactly. When we don't take that button, we don't go, I am afraid, but, and then you turn to that self-worth list, or you turn to anything that you know about yourself. Something as so simple as, I'm really afraid to do this, but I know that I'm supported.
Yes.
I know that there's an opportunity. I know I'm worth more. And I also understand that I'm talking to people who are on the lowest of low.
Mm.
They have absolutely, absolutely nothing. And to those people, I always say, all you need to say is, I am all right. Because I'm uttering these words, there is a little bit of hope that I know that I'm all right.
Yeah.
And that's just where I wish people would start, is to just take that but and turn it into something that is truthful.
Yes.
Instead of just an affirmation that we have been fed or a positive meme that we have been fed.
You know what I like though? Although we're taking all the self-help industry stuff and we're saying a lot of it doesn't work, but you're not debunking the whole theory of self-help. You are saying that the concept is true, the application is terrible.
Yes.
So
yes,
do you want to elaborate on that?
You're getting excited.
I always just want to say I feel like the defender of the universe.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say.
The warrior.
Because it's such a beautiful, simple process. Everything that is put out there is trying to say the same thing. It's trying to say we are energy, and what we do energetically, we can manifest into anything. We're trying to say that you are whatever you choose your universe to be. My favorite thing is we don't know what is true. We have no clue what is true. And everyone is searching for a truth. Meanwhile, we're not searching for our own truth. And everything that has been put out there in any form of self-help has been someone's story from their paradigm and their perception. So it is true, but you have to create a story from your paradigm and your perception. And I'm hoping that through the Holistic Entrepreneur, because of the guiding tools that I've given, it's all been aimed at create your own reality and create your own perception.
So don't model it after Jodine's journey.
No.
But
you can take some takeaways from that.
There are a lot of takeaways.
Everyone's story has things that you can take out of that are positive, that can help you. And everyone's story has things that won't work for you necessarily. Yeah. So and that's where your part of the homework comes into it.
And I think one of the big differences, like, I don't know if you're aware that the new thing now that is coming out is that very successful people take a cold shower.
So
no, I never heard
self-help
that
baby over here. Yes, I've heard.
They say all types of things.
It shocks your apparently it like shocks your body.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's the 5 steps to this, the 10 steps to this,
25 steps
exactly,
and to happiness.
And what I'm saying in the book is that the only steps that you need to take is to walk in your own path of faith. And for me, faith is an acronym. It's a doing word.
Hallelujah.
It's focus. It's focus, acceptance, intention, trust, and happiness.
Oh, wow.
And I unpack that in there. A lot of people sit back and they wait for something to happen in faith. But there is a process that I do every single day of my life that I honestly believe works. And that is the kind of things that I would love people to take from this book.
I see that you've also done Reiki and energy healing and all that kind of stuff. So there is a place for that kind of work within this.
Absolutely.
Right? So where does that step in? Because I know you can't come as a completely broken person and be like, Jodine, fix me. But what is the space of those mediums in assistance?
You know, this is how I ended up writing and changing my career completely, because people would come to me for Reiki and they would lie on the bed and they would hope that something would change. And eventually I realized that if I gave them something practical to do, they would then do it. So let's chat about why you're here. Let's chat about what's going on. Okay, let's take one brave step in order to do that. And it's a combination and it's a collaboration between the energy of who you are and the energy of what you do. So all of those treatments, and it's as simple as just going for a massage or going for a walk. I wake up every morning and I watch the sunrise, and a lot of people ask me why. And it's because it reminds me every day that everything works out exactly as it should. We don't have to do anything.
Wow.
It just happens.
Mm. Yeah.
I do it every day. And that is the same thing as all of these energetic processes, healing, therapy, anything, that it all works together energetically and it falls into place in exactly what you need. But the biggest thing, especially for entrepreneurs, is that there is this misconception that you have to rush and you have to push and you have to burn the candle at both ends.
I have to work hard, work hard. Yes. Be seen working hard. Go to all the meetings.
Yes.
There was this myth that someone wrote, if you wake up at 4 in the morning and you see all the cars that are out there at 4, it's the Bentleys, it's the Ferraris, it's the whatever. And then as the day
unfolds,
I've
woken up at 4, that's a lie.
At 6, at 8, it's all the middle class cars and all the poor people. You know, and then when you look later at night, all the people going back home, it's all the rich people again in their nice cars.
Because that's what you have to do.
Because that's what successful people do. And I was like, okay, what about all the people waiting in a taxi queue at 4 in the morning and then waiting in a taxi queue at 8 o'clock at night? How come they're not super successful? Because they work blooming hard.
And there's a saying that if you could be rich by the amount of work you put in, every African woman in the fields would be rich.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But clearly not. That is not the hand-in-hand thing.
No,
here.
It doesn't
but
work.
But society has kind of taught us that, you know, you have to be
kill
constant.
Yourself.
You have to kill yourself for what you want. And what you are saying is, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm very happy in my life. And you can be happy and successful, because sometimes it's a trade-off.
It's based on the energy. It is not the amount of hours that you put into anything. It is the energetic process with which you create your business, your life, your reality. It's how we make money. It's all those things. One of my greatest things to do when I work with someone, and especially if they've come from that space of work, and things aren't shifting or changing, I always say to them, go take a nap. go take a nap, go to the beach.
I'm sure they look at you like,
are you crazy?
She's crazy. I just said
things aren't working.
Now I'm
not making enough money. Now you're asking me to go take a nap or walk on the beach.
And you know why a lot of people never get to experience what I'm saying? It's because they're too afraid to actually take a nap.
Because they feel like the world will fall apart.
Yes.
You know, one thing I really want to highlight with all of this, because, I mean, we're speaking about it from a very energetic level and we're telling people, you know, you can be happy and successful, but it does not negate the work.
No.
Because actually self-work is the hardest kind of work to do.
Yes.
So there is an element. Do you emphasize this in your talks, that there is a work process here?
I do. I definitely do. And I talk about that. And I talk about... everything has the practicality and everything has the emotional and the energetic side of it. So I work with everything together. And what I love about this is that it's not just for the entrepreneur. It's for the mom. It's for anyone who's trying to just figure out why whatever they have tried does not and is not working. And then there is a lot of practicality in that. I know that I was born to do two incredible things. The one was to be an entrepreneur and the other one was to write, along all the other things, but the entrepreneurship and the writing. And for me, entrepreneurship is about working with such passion and such commitment and such dedication. And I know a lot of people look at me and they go, it looks like you need a break. But they don't stop and see that I take breaks all the time. I take beautiful moments all the time.
And isn't part of what you do, because you're working in your purpose, what actually
is
what
important.
Keeps reviving you. It keeps you energetic because actually it doesn't feel like work.
Absolutely. There is a bit of a warning to that though. You know, it's like someone who is absolutely brilliant at baking cupcakes and they want to turn it into a business, and everyone around them says, turn it into a business.
You're the best baker.
There is a side to entrepreneurship that you have got to prepare yourself for.
Come on, tell us what that is.
It is the side where you deal with money in a way that you didn't expect, that you deal with clients and with accountants. And, you know, I always say to my business partner, I'm so blessed to have him, because I always say to him, I just want to write. And he goes, but there's other things, there's other elements. And people really need to research and see. You're not in the beginning, you do not have a budget for someone else to do your marketing, for someone else to do your PR, for someone else to do any of those things. You are everything. You are just everything.
You're your social media manager, your PR, your marketing, your everything.
Exactly. And then all of those, you know, because eventually you become you are within one human being. You are a manager, you are a human resources.
Oh, yeah.
You're
a head of sales.
You're everything.
I'm telling you.
And then all these personalities within you start to clash, because all you wanted to do was bake.
I just want to act, man.
But it goes back to, I love how everything Jodine has just said in this, you know, time she's been with us, actually ties back in very nicely with the top 5 points we started the show with.
Okay.
Because I feel like in a lot of ways, you are telling people that this is the end goal. This is where you're going. This is what you will achieve should you apply these steps. But it's going to take work. It's going to take ambition. It's going to take, like, because T's 5 steps were... you have to want it. That's number one.
Yes.
You have to want it. Number two, get a mentor. And we were discussing that mentors can be in a book form. So buying your book, that's mentorship, you know. Number three, you got
to
put in the work.
On WhatsApp every other day.
Yes, exactly. No. Exactly. You got to put in the work. That's number three. You really have to put in the work, the self-work, because it's going to take a lot of strength within yourself.
Yes.
Number four, you got to look for the lucky break.
Absolutely.
You know, and number five, you got to keep it together. And I love that, because I feel like that's exactly what your book encompasses, all those.
Absolutely.
You know, and teaching people how to keep it together.
Well, we're about to leave, but
But let Jodine give us her final point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're about to get out of here. And I want Jodine for you to give us your final point. You're about to give us a great thought about that.
For me, my final point is that any process that's started, people always assume that someone else knows where they want to go and knows their direction and knows their purpose. And there are a lot of people out there who don't have their direction. They don't have their purpose. They don't know what they want to put on their vision board, and they don't have an affirmation that they would even begin to say.
Yes.
And I always say, all you need to do is close your eyes and imagine a compass. And where it says north, just let it say happiness and start walking. Every day, every time you're insecure, every time you're unsure, every time the whole world looks like they know where they're going and you don't know where you're going,
dude,
just set your compass to happiness.
Mm, I love that.
In the right direction.
I love that. And your book is actually launching today.
Yes.
Right. Yes. How excited are you? Where is it launching? Where can people find it?
So I went on a very different journey. So you can find it anywhere in the world. It's on Amazon.com.
Oh, that's amazing.
And in South Africa, it's on my website, jodyandsher.com, and it gets delivered for free. Otherwise, it is in two incredible places. The one is Gravity Cafe in London.
Lovely.
And the other one is Energy Emporium in the Colony Center. And I am on my own personal journey of getting the book put into different places and just watching how it unfolds.
Oh, right. My goodness. That's amazing. Yes.
We're out of here until we meet again next week. Thank you so much for being with us in studio, Jodine. And if you were wondering what the original of My Prerogative sounded like, here we go.
Bye.
We're out. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.